ever hopped on a train and thought, hey, I'm helping the planet.
Right.
We tend to think of rail travel as inherently green.
Yeah.
Especially compared to those gas-guzzling planes and cars.
Mm-hmm.
But what about those massive freight trains hauling cargo across continents?
Yeah.
Turns out making them environmentally friendly is a whole lot more complicated than it looks.
It really is.
And that's what we're digging into today, the quest for truly sustainable freight.
Right.
We'll be unpacking this with three fascinating sources.
Okay.
Each like a piece of a puzzle.
Okay.
Revealing a different angle on how North American railroads are trying to meet some seriously ambitious emissions reduction goals.
Yeah.
Set by the Science-Based Targets Initiative,
mm-hmm.
or SBTI. We've got a report diving deep into the nitty-gritty of measuring fuel savings from new technologies.
Okay.
Because even figuring that out is trickier than it sounds.
Yeah.
Then there's an analysis on the wild world of biofuel emissions accounting.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, it's not as simple as just swapping diesel for plant power.
Right.
And finally, we'll be looking at some presentation slides summarizing key research on both those fronts.
Okay.
Fuel-saving tech and how we even measure the impact of something like biofuels.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to jump into the engineer's seat and see if biofuels can really get rail on track for a greener future.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's a crucial question.
Yeah.
And the challenges facing the rail industry are bigger than many people realize.
Right.
These SBTI goals are all about aligning with the Paris Agreement, that global pact to keep global warming in check.
Mm.
But for railroads used to chugging along with just kind of like incremental efficiency gains,
Right. These
targets are a wake-up call.
Yeah, our sources mentioned most mm-hmm. of those deadlines are clustered around 2030, which is right around the corner.
Yeah.
What makes these goals so uniquely tough for the rail industry?
Well, I think scale is a huge factor.
Okay.
Imagine the sheer amount of fuel it takes to move millions of tons of cargo across a continent.
Right.
I mean, that translates into a hefty carbon footprint.
It does.
To understand how railroads are tackling this,
you
need to grasp the concept of scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions.
Okay.
Basically different categories based on where those emissions are coming from.
Okay. So break down those scopes for us. Right. What's the difference?
So scope 1 is the most straightforward.
Okay.
The direct emissions from sources the company owns.
Got it.
Think of the diesel chugging away in a locomotive's engine. That's scope 1.
Okay.
Scope 2 covers indirect emissions from purchased energy.
Okay.
So the electricity powering their offices, rail yards, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Scope 3 is where it gets complex and crucial.
Okay.
It encompasses all the other indirect emissions in their value chain.
Okay. So like the fuel production itself.
Yes.
Even before it gets to the train.
Exactly.
Okay.
It also includes things like the emissions from manufacturing the steel for the tracks.
Wow.
Disposing of old train parts.
Okay.
Basically every bit of environmental impact tied to their operations.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is.
Okay.
Now, the railroads are taking two main approaches to meeting these SBTI targets. Absolute reductions mm-hmm. and intensity-based reductions.
Okay.
Some major players like BNSF and Union Pacific have committed to absolute reductions. Meaning, no matter how much their business grows, their total emissions have to shrink by a specific percentage.
Wow.
That's ambitious, especially for those giants.
It's like saying we're committed to shrinking our impact, period.
Yes.
But other companies are aiming for those intensity-based reductions.
Right.
Okay.
Instead of total emissions, they're aiming to reduce emissions per unit of activity.
Okay.
Typically per gross ton mile. It's basically how much weight they're hauling over a given distance.
Got it.
This approach gives some wiggle room as freight volumes grow.
Okay.
They can technically meet their target even if their total emissions go up, as long as they're getting more efficient per ton moved.
So it's more like we'll get better at doing what we do.
Right.
It sounds like both approaches have their own hurdles, though.
Yeah.
What's the reality check from our sources?
Well,
are railroads actually on track to meet these goals?
Here's the kicker.
Okay.
Despite railroads getting about 1% more fuel efficient each year.
Okay.
Thanks to newer locomotives and better practices.
Mm.
It's not nearly enough to hit those SBTI targets.
Right.
And get this.
Right.
Some railroads are actually above their target glide slope.
What?
Meaning they're already falling behind schedule.
Well, seriously.
Yeah.
So even with those improvements, they're losing ground.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
It's true. And it gets even more interesting when you look at the types of goals.
Okay.
From 2022 to now, those intensity-based railroads.
Right.
They're facing some serious headwinds. Think network congestion,
okay,
which messes with efficiency,
right,
making it harder to hit those per ton targets. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the railroads aiming for absolute reductions have actually gotten a bit of a free pass.
Really?
Because shipping volumes have gone down.
Wait, so because they're moving less stuff, they're hitting their targets?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a sustainable solution, even if it looks good on paper right now.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
Reduced shipping volume isn't good for business in the long run.
Right.
And it's definitely not a solution anyone's banking on.
Okay.
This is where biofuels enter the picture.
Okay.
On the surface, it seems like a simple swap.
Okay.
Ditch some of that dirty diesel for something made from plants. But our sources make it clear it's way more complicated than just pouring in some veggie oil and calling it a day.
Okay, so for those of us who skipped chemistry class to hang out at the train tracks,
sure,
what are biofuels and why are they so different from fossil fuels?
At their core, biofuels are derived from recently living things. Plants, algae,
mm-hmm,
even things like used cooking oil.
Wow. Okay.
That's fundamentally different from the ancient fossilized organic matter that forms petroleum.
Okay.
Why does this matter?
Yeah.
Because biofuels plug into the Earth's natural carbon cycle.
Right. The whole cycle of carbon moving between the air, plants, soil.
Exactly.
I vaguely remember that from school.
Right.
But how does that make biofuels better?
When we burn fossil fuels,
okay,
we're releasing carbon that's been locked underground for millions of years.
Okay. Adding to the greenhouse effect.
Right.
Biofuels, on the other hand, release carbon that was recently absorbed from the atmosphere,
okay,
as those plants grew.
Okay.
It's a closed loop.
Okay.
Making it a more sustainable cycle.
So it's like borrowing carbon from the atmosphere, not digging up ancient reserves.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's why biofuels have the potential to significantly reduce net carbon emissions compared to traditional fuels.
Right.
Our sources even mention that with the right blend,
yeah,
they could offset a massive chunk of emissions, maybe even enough for railroads to actually meet those ambitious SBTI goals.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So do we just declare victory for biofuels and call it a win for the planet?
Well,
there must be a catch.
There's always a catch.
Right.
One of the big challenges highlighted in LMOA Biofuel GHG Accounting 2024.
Yeah. Is the lack of standardized carbon intensity.
Okay.
Or CI scores for biofuels.
Right.
Think of it like nutrition labels for fuel.
Okay.
You might see low fat on two different yogurt containers, but one is loaded with sugar.
Right.
Same idea here.
Okay.
You can't just say biofuel is good without knowing how it was made.
Okay.
Or what it was made from.
So you can't just say biofuel is good without knowing how it was made or what it was made from.
Right.
Got it.
A CI score tells you how much greenhouse gas is emitted over a fuel's entire life cycle, from production to burning.
Okay.
And with biofuels, that life cycle can vary wildly.
Give us an example. What kind of factors make a difference?
Let's say you've got two barrels of biodiesel.
Okay.
One is made from soybeans grown on land that was recently deforested to plant those beans.
Okay.
The other is made from used cooking oil collected from restaurants.
Yeah.
Even though they're both biodiesel.
Yeah.
That first one carries a way bigger environmental cost.
Right.
Even before it powers a train.
Right.
And that's where those scope 3 emissions, those upstream impacts we talked about,
right,
get really tricky.
Right. Because if producing biofuel means clearing forests.
Yes.
Or using tons of fertilizer, those actions might cancel out the benefits of the fuel itself.
Exactly.
Right.
And this isn't just about soybeans versus used cooking oil.
Right.
It's about transportation distances.
Right.
Fertilizer use,
mm-hmm,
land use changes.
Right.
It gets complex quickly.
Yeah.
This is where something like the GLEC framework comes in.
Okay. Another acronym.
Yeah.
Hit us with it. What's the GLEC framework? And how does it fit into all this?
Think of it like standardized nutrition labels, but for logistics emissions.
Okay.
The GLEC framework is a way to calculate and report greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay.
That's been endorsed by a really well-respected international group.
Okay.
It acknowledges that a single carbon intensity score doesn't tell the whole story.
Right.
And gives guidelines to make things more transparent and comparable.
So it's like setting the rules of the game so everyone is playing fair.
Yes.
And we can actually compare apples to apples,
yeah,
or maybe soybeans,
really,
to,
yeah,
where you get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is crucial for railroads because it lets them track their own progress.
Okay.
Compare themselves to competitors, and show investors and customers that they're taking this seriously.
Right.
All with a common language.
no more fuzzy math or greenwashing allowed.
Right.
But if biofuels are this complicated,
yeah,
even with better accounting,
right,
what else is the rail industry doing to clean up its act? It's like you said earlier, it's a whole puzzle,
yeah,
not just one magic solution.
Right.
Biofuels are just one piece.
Yeah.
What are some of the other pieces railroads are using to get greener?
Our
sources mentioned a bunch of fuel-saving technologies.
Yeah.
Beyond just the type of fuel itself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're talking about things like aerodynamic modifications to locomotives.
Okay.
Think of it like giving those boxy trains a more streamlined, fuel-efficient shape.
Okay.
And then there are energy management systems that optimize train handling,
okay,
kind of like cruise control, but way more advanced,
right,
adjusting speed and braking to save fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And even things as simple as better lubricants for wheels.
Okay.
Reducing friction might seem minor, but those tiny gains add up over millions of miles.
Some of this stuff sounds seriously high tech.
Yeah.
But I was fascinated by how our source analytical approaches,
yeah,
highlighted the challenge of actually measuring the impact of these technologies.
Yeah.
Like if a new gadget claims to save 2% fuel.
Yeah.
How do you even prove that?
Right.
It's not like slapping a low-flow shower head on and seeing your water bill go down.
Right. It's surprisingly tricky.
Right.
In a controlled lab setting, you can isolate variables and test precisely.
Right.
But out on the rails with varying,
yeah,
weather, cargo weight, even the engineer's driving style, all those things impact fuel consumption, making it a statistical nightmare to tease out the impact of just one new technology.
Okay. So walk us through it.
Sure.
Let's say I'm a skeptical railroad executive.
Mm-hmm.
Convince me this isn't just a guessing game.
Okay.
How do they measure fuel savings accurately in the real world?
So our source gives a great example. Locomotive wheel flange lubrication.
Okay.
It's basically applying a special lubricant to the part of the wheel that helps keep the train on the track.
Got it.
Reducing friction.
Okay.
Now, you'd think less friction automatically means less fuel burn, right?
Right.
But proving that statistically is the challenge.
Okay.
Just looking at overall fuel use wouldn't cut it.
Right.
Too many other factors.
So how did they crack the code? Did they hire a bunch of data scientists to follow trains around with calculators?
They went even more high tech.
Okay.
The study used a dedicated rail test facility,
okay,
PTCI.
Okay.
It's like a giant train set where they can control everything from weather to cargo weight.
Okay.
They rigged locomotives with sensors to measure energy use with and without the lubricant.
Okay.
Even factoring in GPS data for things like speed and elevation changes.
Okay. Now that's impressive.
Yeah.
It's like a scientific experiment, but for trains.
Exactly. And that level of detail is what's needed to validate these fuel-saving technologies.
Right.
In this case, the study found that the lubricant actually did reduce energy consumption
by
a statistically significant 3.2%.
Right.
That might not sound huge, but across thousands of locomotives,
yeah,
that adds up to massive fuel savings and emissions reductions.
That's a perfect example of how these seemingly small percentages can make a real difference.
Yes.
Especially in an industry as massive as rail freight.
It is.
It reminds me of that saying, take care of the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves.
Precisely.
Right.
And our LMOA fuel saving analytics presentation made a crucial point.
Okay.
We can't dismiss these technologies just because they're hard to measure.
Right.
In fact, they argued that railroads need to get even more sophisticated with their analysis,
sure,
investing in research and testing to find and scale up these solutions.
Because what gets measured gets managed, right?
Exactly.
You can't improve what you don't understand.
Exactly.
Right.
And this is where collaboration comes in.
Okay.
The presentation recommended that railroads pool resources to support research at places like TTCI, sharing the data,
right,
that helps everyone move faster and avoid duplicating efforts.
That just makes sense.
Right.
It benefits the entire industry and ultimately the planet.
Exactly.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
From those ambitious SBTI goals and the biofuel conundrum,
yeah,
to these super cool but complex fuel-saving technologies.
Right.
What are your final takeaways for our listeners?
Right.
What should they be thinking about as they go about their day? Maybe even hop on a train for their next trip.
The biggest takeaway is this.
Okay.
Making something as essential as rail freight truly sustainable,
yeah,
is a huge challenge that requires a multifaceted approach.
Right.
There's no single answer, no magic wand.
Right.
It demands innovation, collaboration, and a commitment to using data. not just for efficiency, but for true environmental progress.
It's a journey, not a destination.
Right? Exactly.
Okay.
We also have to remember the importance of transparency.
Okay.
Whether we're talking biofuels or high-tech train gadgets,
right.
Accurate accounting and open data sharing are crucial.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we ensure everyone's playing fair.
Right.
And we can actually track progress towards a greener future for rail.
No more greenwashing, just real measurable change.
Exactly.
It's been fascinating to unpack all this with you.
The pleasure was all mine.
Yeah.
It's encouraging to see the rail industry embracing these challenges head on.
Right.
They have a real opportunity to lead the way in sustainable transportation.
Well said.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey into the fascinating world of green freight. If you want to explore further, be sure to check out the show notes for links to all the sources we discussed.
Yes.
And remember, even small changes can have a huge impact when we all pull in the same direction.
That's right.
Until next time, keep those wheels turning towards a brighter, more sustainable future.